sort of, at this point, most of the people on the internal Lehigh team are here, but our external reviewers are not, but we think they're on their way. Sure. Well, not all the way. So we're taking a look at the documents. The two documents that we have, I'm going to explain them in more detail later, but one document is the report that Morgan Jennings and Deborah Dirksen prepared for us, which gives us an analysis of the survey that most of you took. I'm going to be looking at some of this data. We're going to be looking at it in the context of the breakout group. So the second handout is a list of questions that we're going to discuss in breakout groups. And I have some of Morgan and Deborah's analysis, as well as some of the comments that came with the survey as part of the questions that I'm asking, to give you some idea of what some of the issues are as the survey respondents saw it. Today's meeting are to review the web-based survey, which was taken primarily by students in my course in multimedia, but also some faculty in computer science, members of the team, and a few people from outside, including a professor of computer science in Israel, as a friend of mine, and a high school teacher. And we had 50 people take the survey by Monday. We're going to use this and the survey to look at our goals and our analysis and our prototype. We're going to use this as a starting point for brainstorming. I'm not just interested in getting more input about what we already did. I'm really more interested in using this meeting as a starting point for talking about the development that we'll do over the summer on an alpha version, which we plan to actually put into use in courses this fall and evaluate. The software developing will be used for the object-oriented software engineering course in the fall, and possibly also some of it will be used for the freshman course. We're being recorded. The audio tape is for our evaluators, Morgan Jennings and Deborah Dirksen in Colorado. They helped me prepare for this meeting by analyzing the survey data. Could you make sure everyone... Okay, so now you all have Morgan's write-up of the data. And you also have a copy of the questions that I have, which we're going to look at in breakout groups, and I've taken snippets from her write-up as well as from the data itself as input for our discussion. After we're done, I'm going to be sending them the tape, and that will help them to assess what we accomplished today. So a very key component of the project, which NSF values greatly, is to have expert evaluation by experts in education. So that's what that's their role, even though they can't be here today. Okay, the project goals, make sure we all know what we're trying to do. We're trying to design a multimedia framework for constructive, collaborative, inquiry-based learning with multiple tracks. So I thought I would just quickly go over what those fancy words mean, which is what I think they mean. Constructive learning means learning by building, by creating, by integrating, and getting feedback. So for example, quite independently of multimedia, when you go off and write a program, well, if you're learning a new programming language, one way to learn it is to write a program. you're constructing something. Or in the context of object-oriented software engineering, one way to learn how to do analysis is to use a tool that will help you and learn how to use that tool and actually create a small analysis of a small project. So what we would like to do is to create an environment that will encourage that, facilitate that. Collaborative learning means that there'll be some kind of a live link between students and experts, who can either be professors or teaching assistants or librarians. And what we have in mind is that students will have a connection that can either be live or a connection to a recorded ShowMe interface. And you've sort of got some idea what that looks like in the tutorial, in the prototype. Inquiry-based learning is a key idea. The idea is students learn by doing research, learn by actively looking at the material rather than passively receiving it. So a key idea is doing exploratory research. And that's where we think the reference librarians are going to be important, and also the hot topics system. And finally, multiple tracks means that we want to deliver content for students at different levels. And there are a couple of different sense of multiple tracks. One is tracks of content or course level. So we want to deliver content for freshmen and graduate students and intermediate level students, juniors, sophomores, juniors, and seniors. And also another sense of multiple tracking is being able to look at the material in different ways depending on your learning style. So some people learn better, you know, by actually reading some text. Some people learn better by hearing it. Some people learn better by seeing, allowing the environment to adapt to the learner's learning style. Okay, so those are the goals of the project. You've seen the documents that we created to do the analysis and design, and you've seen our initial prototype. Your input is very important to us. So what I'm proposing that we're going to do is split up into breakout groups. And see, now it's 4:15, but there are less of us, so I have to improvise a little bit. My idea was that we break out into groups for about half an hour, where each group would look at a set of questions and try to answer the questions, make recommendations, and then we'll come back together and we'll all someone from each group will present the findings of that group to the whole panel, and then the panel will discuss those findings, and those will become recommendations to our team. You have the questions. You'll work on a set of questions and get as far as you can. If you finish before half an hour and you want to look at other questions, that would be great. There are a couple of bonus questions on the back. You can look at other breakout groups' questions. If you don't finish, that's okay too. All right, this is how I broke things up. This was before I knew that Barnes might not come, and before I knew that Drew Snyder might not come. So now what are we going to do? Okay. I was going to tell you anyway, we have one person who's not, who we can add, so we're only down one. Okay, Ashidar is here. You can move around, you don't have to be in the groups that I've assigned, but there was a little bit of reason that went into these things. Less so for the Lutron folks, I wasn't sure what you would be interested in, so I just arbitrarily assigned you to groups, and you can reassign yourselves if you like different questions. The first group will look at user interface issues, and I thought I would lead that group, and so far I just have Paul. So you want to work with me?
Sure.
And maybe I'll take Sashidhar with me. Okay. Now the second group is going to look at multi-tracking, constructive exercises, and the hot topic system. Shama's been working on constructive exercises. He actually has an example, which I have on this laptop. So you can show that to your team. Just come up front and work up here. So we have, and David has been working on, with Professor Pottinger on hot topics. Professor Pottinger may come in later. If he does, he can join that group. So we have David, Shoma, and Brian on that. Is that okay? Okay, and then the third group is going to work on personae, voices, and the collaborative interface. The collaborative learning interface is Professor Kessler's part of the project, so he can lead that group. And Kiang is here, and Tian Hao is here. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay. All right. Since I have this laptop running here with a constructive exercise, but let's the second group use my laptop. You can use your laptop, and my group can come with me to my office. If Drew Snyder comes in, tell him to come to my office.
Okay.
And we'll reconvene in about half an hour. Okay. Help yourselves to coffee and cookies. Yes, so now we're back on, and we're looking at Group 2's findings. David Gedrick.
We started off by discussing the multi-tracking feature of the system, and the main thing we looked at there was the user interface. It was discussed as potentially a connect-the-dot model, where the instructor would first select a track and present that track to the user, but the user could access whatever modules they chose in the track. So if they already knew a topic that was being taught, they could skip ahead. But also, if they skipped ahead too much and they found themselves lost, the system should know the prerequisites of each module. So if they got lost, they could click, say, on a prerequisite bug that would bring them back down to like the prerequisites where they potentially needed to know more information.
So in other words, from the beginning, they would have a path, and they could click anywhere on the path.
Mm-hmm. There could also be other modules that
were. Well, a module will be a screen. Is that what you mean?
A module would be a topic more so than
okay.
a screen. And I guess these modules could also have sub-modules. So the, I guess, track that an instructor would set up would basically be, I want you to go through these chapters, I guess. And each chapter would have subparts, and they would require that you know knowledge before you enter the chapter. But the instructor would set up the initial path, but the student could skip parts of the path if they already knew the material themselves. But the model should be like self-referencing, so if a student got lost, they could click on that module and see, well, what do I need to know for this and what don't I know, so I can go back to there and learn that.
Discussion?
Yeah, I think this Paul, right? Brian had some good ideas on how to implement this. The default track needn't include all of the topics. In other words, instead of thinking about introductory versus advanced topics. Just we have a bunch of modules, and the instructor has laid out maybe one or two itineraries through those modules, and the student can view that itinerary, work their way through it. If they need to, they can highlight a given module and see what the prerequisites are for that module. There may be additional prerequisites that the instructor chose not to include on purpose, and they're also maybe material which is related to it, which the instructor chose not to include. And we also felt like, as part of the interface for the student, not necessarily for the student, but for the instructor, as I think Dave intimated, it would be good to allow people to take a default itinerary and to build another itinerary, like to copy an itinerary, paste it into a workspace, and then, you know, just drag and drop different modules into that itinerary to easily build their own itinerary through the material. And the thing would obviously be self-referential, so that it would understand prerequisites, and if the person building the itinerary got things mixed up, the system would tell them, hey, wait a minute, you're violating these prerequisites, are you sure you want to do this? And it just that kind of a cross-check. And then, you know, there's obviously going to be certain prerequisites which aren't part of the system, so those would be references to material outside of this particular courseware, and pointers to perhaps other textbooks, who knows what. I mean, it's all part of a real textbook, but we're just talking about how can we build that into a more interactive framework. So anyway, we thought that distinguishing between introductory and advanced was not necessarily a good idea. That was my impression. I don't know, Brian and Dave, and somebody can show me connect.
An alternative might be, instead of having introductory and advanced in the menu, you could have an introductory track and an advanced track, which is not necessarily the same thing. They're not introductory and advanced topics, but tracks.
Right. Itineraries. We're using the word itinerary.
Okay,
right.
Itineraries, tracks, whatever. The idea being that you might actually use some of the content in an advanced topic as introductory, some of it as advanced. So different modules could have different ways of, you could have different tracks or itineraries through the different modules. It's not just at the module level you have tracks, but at the screen level, all the way down to that level. For example, an introductory person might say, well, I want to know a little bit about abstract data types, but I really don't want to really create any. I just want to know what they are. Okay. For the advanced person to say, well, not only do I want to know what they are, I have to create them, and I really need to know how it works with inheritance. Well, the introductory person might not really want to go into that kind of detail. Okay. So different tracks could be set up, and which could be default tracks for introductory and advanced learners, and then let the instructor say, okay, let's create, I don't like that, these default tracks, let's create different ones. Is that what you have in mind? Okay, we seem to have a consensus for this.
But I think that there was an emphasis, at least in my mind, on the need for a nice, versatile interface where you could copy and paste, you know, just like you do with Microsoft Word or Excel.
Yes.
You know, you highlight, maybe you highlight three modules, you hit Control-C, you go to your work area, hit Control-V, and then you've got that part of a new itinerary worked out in that you want to maybe get your base.
Want to continue?
I guess the next section we discussed was the constructive exercises. Shoma displayed like a brief example of one, and the main points that seemed to come up were that the user needs to be able to control how fast it's going. This one didn't have the full voiceover, but it went by at a rather fast pace, and if the user was having trouble following, it would be nice if there were breakpoints where it would stop, let the user catch up, see what was on the screen, and then continue. Also, in the drag and drop exercise, it would be good if, like, when the user drags something to the wrong area, it would leave that thing there and hold the error message, or send it back but hold the error message on the screen longer so the user knew that that was the improper place for what they dragged. Additionally, like when they drag something into the correct place, there should be potentially a color change in addition to the sound for correctness, because we may be dealing with someone that is deaf or has a hearing impairment and didn't hear the sound. So it's just more ways of representing that this is a correct response, this is an incorrect response. And finally, in the hot topics,
Before we go on, are there other approaches or examples of constructive exercises that we should consider? Could you answer that question? But I guess the question is, did you see that exercise as being adequate as a constructive exercise?
It's adequate for the very basic beginner, because all it's doing, all that exercise is doing is taking a very simple concept and having people copy it. And I had only seen that screen once, and I knew about half of it, even though I got the first few guesses wrong. But still, I think the fundamental idea is good. So I think Professor Kessler came up with an idea a couple of weeks ago in which he suggested that we actually do some constructive, quote, coding. And I know coding is a bad word in you know, ADTs. They're not supposed to code. It's supposed to be code independent. But the idea is actually build an abstract data type instead of just identifying the classes, which is just too simple of an exercise. Do something really challenging and sophisticated. And also, this is supposed to be 400 level material, isn't it? Is it 400 level class?
Well, either introductory or 400
level. Okay. But anyway, and with that in mind, it certainly should be a fairly sophisticated exercise. But still. Basically, I think a constructive exercise like that is good, but it just has to be much more sophisticated.
How do I get to the exercise part so everyone can see it?
Just click on the second link.
And then click around the.
Right there.
The
yeah, that's it.
Well, how it always works is to click on.
You just click on it. I should make it clear that this is only the first page of the exercise, and it does get more sophisticated as you go on. But this points out the problem that Flash programming it makes this extremely tedious. So for everyone's benefit, it's coming at you. It really should go right where it belongs there, didn't actually go there. Eventually, we get all the things, all the labels in the right place. The next screen will then begin to actually take you to the step of defining a name and the sets and the signatures. And then there'll be another screen for dealing with the semantics and then running a simulation. So you're actually constructing the ADT piece by piece. And I know this was difficult for a lot of the students in my OOS course. This is not trivial to create ADTs. At the end of this, you will actually create an ADT and then run a simulation to see what that ADT does. And that pushes us a little. And that concept was not easy for graduate students. Some of them were able to do it, many of them were not. Right? Okay. So this is, some people just didn't see why we're even doing this. Well, I suspect that part of the reason why you didn't see why you were even doing it is because you didn't really understand what it is that you were doing. Okay. It's hard to see why if you don't know what. Okay, so there's definitely a motivation for this. But the question is, does it go far enough?
You have to click on done to activate the chroming section.
Well, if you don't know what to do.
Click on.
It works a lot better when you're looking at the button, okay. it will finish it for you. But the important point is this is not the entire script. This is the first page out of about, we have the first two pages out of about 8 pages of script. Okay, shall we go on to point three?
Okay, point three, we're a little tight on time. So the main problem we saw there is the hot topic system needs a lot more clarification as far as name, because what the hot topic system is supposed to do is detect emerging concepts in literature. So if a student wanted to go out and find whether something such as ADTs was being used in the literature, they'd use the hot topic system to see are ADTs, like the use being, is it an emerging concept as far as the other, I guess, concepts in the literature. And the main problem there was the name of the system. Hot topic seems to refer to a hot topic in the coursework. Right. And I guess one of the things we thought about is changing the name to maybe related hot research topics in OSE as a possible clarification name to pull away from this isn't something that's related directly in the course.
Yeah, Brian understood hot topics to be topics that are within the course. And that's a very reasonable conclusion to draw. That's not, in fact, what we intended. So we talked for a while about a different name, which would probably help a lot. Couldn't come up with a good one. And then finally decided that doing something like Dave suggested, either latest trends in OSE or related hot research topics in OSE, will immediately give people the correct understanding of what it is that they're doing, that they're leaving the topics in the courseware, and leaving the topics in the course and moving outside to some other source. That's it.
I have a couple of comments about that. One is that the courseware may not always be OOSE.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. For example, the introductory course will have lots of other topics, and we want it to be general. Secondly, there probably should be a button. The hot topics engine should be accessible from the user interface at all times, not just when we actually make an assignment. That's certainly the assignment will certainly motivate people. But sometimes, suppose if somebody really wants to go to the hot topics, a possibility might be that instead of a web browser, the web browser button should be related stuff or outside research. And hot topics is one of the things you can go to. Comments? Explore more. Explore! What a great name for a button.
Will we have a button called Explore?
It's a button, it's not a program.
As long as they don't try and sell it.
I want to sell it.
I don't see a problem with Explore.
What?
Explore is a button, I think.
Not Explorer. Right. Explore.
Explore.
Ah, okay.
Explore.
Explore, okay. Well, that's a thought. Now, somewhere in there, in the audio, voiceover, or in the text, we have to say, explore related hot research topics, and that...
Well, then you could have a explore that could bring up a menu.
Right.
Like preferences, and that menu could be, related web pages, ask the librarian a question about it, look at emerging trends with the hot topic engine.
Right.
Then you can have all more words in a menu.
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds good.
Okay.
So I guess we're going to have an explore button.
An explore button, which places the user interface. So the user interface goes second, and then the Neutron people will be done.
do you guys have to run out of here at 5 o'clock? Or?
Somewhere around that.
Yeah.
Okay. We have a secretary. Do you want to present our findings? You have to speak nice and loud. You come over here and speak into the tape recorder.
Actually, the mic's right there, so it's probably better.
Okay.
Maybe why was one with that clear? If you want to record, maybe somebody can record everything.
With Brian, Michael, you need the notes.
Sure, I'll talk. Okay. Overall, I think we thought that the user interface was pretty visually appealing. I liked the cleanliness of it. It wasn't cluttered. Not a whole lot of obnoxious graphics. One complaint that I had about it was the menu didn't seem very intuitive. Didn't seem to represent anything. So we discussed rearranging the menu along the bottom. And just
navigation bar on the bottom.
The navigation bar, in order to try and give more visual clues as to what it does. In general, what we did was we put, like, you know, program navigation type things up on the top, and then, you know, pretty much everything else along the bottom of it. You know, we moved the back button over all the way to the left. The forward button we kept on the right. You know, we put the quit button and the pause button that we proposed up on top as well, as well as a menu button. And then we just moved the expert button down, and basically down to where the quit button is. And we just left the find, glossary, browser, and preferences buttons to where they were.
So now what we're doing is proposing change the web browser button to an explore button.
Hmm. I think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
That would give the hot topics some place to go.
Yeah.
And also, make those buttons a little more alive.
Yeah,
right now, things.
Yeah, right now those buttons, like, you know, you have a square button for forward, whereas it would just as easily turn into like a small arrow pointing over to the right, kind of indicating like you want to go forward. But you can still keep them with like the simple geometric shape like it is now. Just kind of give it some kind of visual clue as to which direction you're heading.
I'm not so sure that separating the forward and the back buttons is a good idea. I think you want to have them grouped together. I think you want them adjacent to each other. That's where people expect them to be, I think.
It's a little different than what we're used to. We've been trained by all these browsers now. So, in fact, having them, they're separate in my mind. Even though they're next to each other, they're still separate. Why? Because their spacing is identical to all the other buttons, so they're separated. And I found that awkward when I was using it. I was like, hey, wait a minute, I need my little arrows right next to each other so I can just go boom, boom, boom.
Right, we're not using the Gestalt principles for grouping.
Right.
Here.
Yeah, so I think that's a good point to make.
It is true that, just so everyone's on the same page, that when I actually use the universal machine, I will actually hit that button. Oh, I skipped it.
Yeah.
Right. It's going back, and sometimes, if a particular thing responds really well, it's nice to be able to go backwards and forwards and not have to move the mouse that far. Is that what you're getting?
Yeah. Oh,
the
yeah.
Things are too close that you can go backwards and forwards easily.
Yeah.
So if you have it on two separate, if you separate those two buttons, you're going to find that that's going to discourage people from actually navigating through the content. We really want to encourage people to navigate through the content.
On the other hand, I like sort of grouping the forward and the experts buttons together by putting them on the same side, because they sort of give you the idea of you're going somewhere, you're doing something.
You like that?
I like that.
So you think is our consensus then, let's see what other people have to say, that the forward and backward buttons should be simply closer together? They don't have to be symmetrical in their distance?
I like the arrows that people use and the fact that they're close together.
Well, we're going to hire a graphical designer, and he made it throw the whole thing out. But we do like the simplicity, the clean. There was a strong response to the white screen, simple user interface, lack of clutter. People like that. Other comments? Other comments about this?
One other thing that we had decided was that the help button wasn't all that helpful, and that, you know, all help does is give you tooltips when you can just have tooltips on by default.
Good idea.
So, yeah, it seemed to be a pretty useless menu items, so we just kind of threw that out.
And tooltips should appear much closer to where they're actually. Sometimes the tooltips were not so close to the buttons that I was attempting to explain.
We can use help for glossary of terms, which also Brian was suggesting. Like, there should be a glossary of terminology that we'll be using overall in all our modules together with links.
Well, in that case, you just call it glossary.
Yeah, I mean, just change the name, but leave it.
Well, I think you need to make a distinction between a navigation system and the content. Sounds like you're talking about content.
Yes.
Well, whereas where I'm expecting here is I'm expecting things to work with the content, not actual content. If I I'm going to look for a glossary, I wouldn't look for it here. I would look for it perhaps over here where I have listing of contents,
yeah,
topics. Over here I'm expecting things to make the thing go, or things to perhaps help me with the interface.
So you don't think glossary should be there at all? It should be over here.
No, I would put glossary over on the left myself.
That's a good idea.
Is there anything else that belongs on the left that's just glossary? What about explore?
Well, again, that's a method of navigation, so it makes sense to put that in the navigation box.
How about references? That's not really a method of navigation.
But it's also, but I don't know if I would call this navigation bar. I would really call this the interface bar, right? The interface involves navigation and also preferences about the interface.
Excuse me, Morgan.
Should the glossary be changed, the menu bar be changed to an index or more so a quick link button?
So you could do an index because you have a set of web pages and you can think of navigation including a very quick method to get at each individual page. I mean, that still sort of fits the mental model of navigation rather than the content. So I can more readily accept an index rather than a glossary, where the glossary really contains content.
I think we had in mind the glossary, though, was definitions of words that are appearing in the content.
Okay. Moving on to our next question is, does the user interface include all the needed functionality? I don't think we pretty much came to the common consensus that yes, it did. There wasn't any major additions that needed to be made. The complaint that I had about it was that it was very, like, turning off the sound didn't really affect the way the material was presented enough. As it is, by default, the sound is on. I was working on it on a computer. When I fill out my survey, I didn't have access to a computer that had any speakers on it. So I didn't hear any of the voiceovers, and so therefore I missed all of the content that the voiceovers were saying. I had no idea what was going on for most of that. And consequently, there were a lot of points to that. I had read what was on the screen, I was just kind of sitting there waiting for the board button to start flashing or whatever, so that's one thing that I think needs to be worked on, because there will be situations in which people are using this when they don't have access to sound.
Or they want to turn off sound
for
whatever reason.
Yeah, or if they just plain don't like to hear the sound. So you need to have some way to pick up the slack for the things that are being said but not written on the screen when the sound is turned off.
We did talk about one function that we might want to add. Are you going to come with that?
Which was that?
Pause.
Oh, yeah. That was the next thing. We thought that a pause button would be useful, even if the content was chunked up pretty well, so it was in, 1 or 2 minute segments. Still, then, it would be nice to have a pause button, especially, if as the narrator is speaking, things are happening on the screen, so, you could... wait until something appears on the screen, you can pause it and think about it and make sure you understand it, and then unpause it and see what happens next.
There was another function that we didn't talk about, but it did come up once or twice in the survey, a minimize button. Suppose you want to look at what else is happening on your computer.
Right. Yeah.
There's no minimize button on that screen.
Yeah.
The only way to get out of it is Alt-Tab, which beginners wouldn't know about.
Yeah, that gets down to this lower next question about screen real estate.
Go on. Any discussion about that?
I think it would be useful to have something like that.
Yeah.
Should it look like Windows?
Sure. Well, that would be like something that people would pick up on quickly. It could also be included, I guess, in the actual menu bar with the same kind of format as the other buttons have. I think the regular minimize buttons would be like more intuitive to people because most people have been using Windows and expect to see the minimize button a certain way and for it to appear in the upper right hand corner of the screen.
Can you simply just have Windows put a menu bar at the top, or even just a window bar at the top, title bar? That's the best way to do it, because that's what people are familiar with, is every application has a title bar with the left hand side where I can quit out of it, and then the right hand side where I can quit, where I can minimize, or I can maximize.
Then you wouldn't need a quit button.
It's another place to put a quit button. Right.
Thank you for coming.
No,
see you another year.
I think that would be nice, but I also think that would take away from the cleanliness of the interface. Like right now, the menu bar, it's pretty clean. It's not too cluttered. And if you put like the regular Windows bar on the top, it's going to
take up space
and give you a disjointed kind of feel, I guess, to it. At least that's what I feel. I feel we wouldn't lose too much of putting a minimize button on that menu bar in the same format, that people would be able to pick up on it fairly quickly.
So I've seen before where you have on the top right corner, you just have the minimize, maximize buttons up here and don't have a title bar. I don't know, that probably is entirely inside the application rather than being a windowing system.
You can do that, but it seems to me that it would be cleaner being on the actual menu bar itself that we have now.
Okay, well I thought, well, you mean on this?
Yeah,
this
that right one right there.
But you want it to have a look like what it looks like in Windows?
No, I'd say if we're going to put it on that menu bar, we just have another one of those boxes and call it minimize.
Hmm.
If we're going to still have quit, we'd probably want to put it next to quit.
I would argue that we might as well, if we're going to put it someplace where people aren't expecting a real minimize button, to just call it hide.
Do that, yeah.
Because that gives you an idea of, well, I want to switch to other stuff. And since you're not in a windowing system at this point, minimize might not make as much sense.
I will say that part of my philosophy, which did influence the design of its interface, was this is not Windows. One thing we should bear in mind is that Windows won't look like Windows by the time this is done.
Windows will always have a title bar and a way to maximize, minimize, and close.
Microsoft is constantly changing the user interface.
Well, yes.
Think about what Windows 3.1 looked like.
They don't get far from the Apple, and the Apple is not going very far.
Yeah, and there's another argument in favor of what Drew is saying, and that is, if you look at the X Windows stuff over the last, I don't know, 20 years, it hasn't changed a whole lot. You know, the X Windows interfaces. There's half a dozen or more different X Windows clients, but they all look pretty much like Microsoft, and they look like Macintosh.
And as far as from 3.1 to 2000, they all still have the title bar, which basically you can double click.
Well, 2000 hasn't changed all that much.
You can
the next one will change somewhat more.
Well, you can look at the Apple OpenX interface to see what the next interface is probably going to look like.
That's a good idea.
And it still,
but
it still has those.
I don't think we should be. Here's my argument: should we be driven by Microsoft? Aren't there many applications, and there are applications that don't look like all the other Windows applications?
But
is there an advantage to looking like all the other applications other than users will immediately know how to minimize and maximize and immediately know how to quit. They won't have to think about that.
Well, you have to. You have
and
to
resize.
Right. You have to decide whether you're going to buy into the Windows or not. Right. If you don't buy into the Windows, minimize makes no sense. Right. If you're going to take over the computer, which is what you're insinuating, right, is I want to take over the computer. You know, if switching out of the application is it doesn't make as much sense. But if you have a windowing system, then you want if you simply use the regular title bar, then yes, the appearance is going to change, but the functionality is always going to be there. It's very deeply embedded into the windowing system that these features will be in every application. You know, depending on the appearance and the actual interaction to make it happen might change, but every component will be able to be hidden, maximized, or whatever. And if you use the programming model, the API from windowing, the windowing system, when everything changes, the interface changes, your stuff will change with it. And the advantage of that is that you are essentially conforming to a standard by default. If you want to go with windowing systems, that's the way you want to do it. If you want to take over the screen, then I don't know if minimize is really a good option to provide. But maybe you do want to be able to switch away, say essentially switch from your application to windowing.
Yeah.
Maybe a different thing.
Let's go on.
Okay.
I have a comment about that your spokesman left.
Yes.
But I have a comment about this third question.
Okay. Third question. How can the content menu be more effective? Why don't I try to remember what we talked about? You wrote notes, but I'll talk a little bit, and you can tell me if I forgot something. I think we decided that we liked the content menu, and that was also the consensus of the people taking the survey. It wasn't using up an unreasonable amount of space, although it could possibly use